Turn with me, please, to 2 Kings, chapter 4. This is a story about Elisha and the widow's oil that covers in this chapter. But there's another story also. And it starts in verse 8 about the Shunammite woman. And it says that she was a great woman. In other words, she is a woman of station. And she asked him to come and eat at her house. And so it was that as often as he passed by, he turned in there to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, "Now I understand that you are a holy man of God, which passes by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I ask of you, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed, a table, and a stool, and a candlestick, and it shall be, when he comes to us, that he'll turn in here." And it fell on a day that he came there, and he turned into the chamber, and he lay there. And he said unto Gehazi, his servant, "Call this Shunammite." And when she had called her, she stood before him. And he said, "Behold, you have been careful for us with all this care. What is it to be done for you? What should be spoken for you to the king or to the captain of the host?" And she answered, "I dwell among my own people." And he said, "What then is to be done for you?" And so he asked if there was something he could do to help her life be improved, seeing that she had done something for him and his servant Gehazi. And she said, "No, everything's fine." But Gehazi then thought about it in verse 14, and he says, "Verily, this woman doesn't have a child, and her husband is old." And he called her, and when he had called her, he stood in the door, and he said, "About this season, according to the time of life," in other words, in 9 months, "you're going to embrace a son." And she said, "No, my lord, you man of God, do not lie unto your handmaid." But the woman conceived, had a son in that season that Elisha had talked to her, according to the time of life. When the child was grown, it fell on a day that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said to his father, "My head, my head." And he said to the lad, "Carry him to his mother." And when he had taken him, he brought him to his mother, and he sat on her knees till noon, and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God in that little room that she had constructed. And she shut the door upon him and went out. And she called to her husband and said, "Send me, I ask you, one of the young men, that I may run to the man of God and come back with him." 23, and he said, "Why will you go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath." And she said, "Well, it shall be well." Then she saddled an ass and said to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Slack not your riding for me, except I ask you." So she went and came into the man of God to Mount Carmel. It came to pass when the man of God saw her afar off that he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Behold, yonder, that's the Shunammite. Run now and ask her, what does she need? Is there anything I can do for you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?" And she answered, "It is well." When she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to thrust her away. And the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord has hid it from me, and he has not told me what's troubling her." Then she said, "Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I say, 'Do not deceive me, that I'm okay'?" Then he said to Gehazi, Gird up your loins, take my staff in your hand, go your way, and if you meet any man, don't stop to say hi. If there's any solution to this problem, I want you to get on, and then lay my staff upon the face of the child. And the mother of the child said, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, I will not leave you. And he arose and followed her. While Gehazi got along quickly, passing on before them, and he laid the staff upon the face of the child. But there was neither voice nor hearing when he went again to meet him, and he told him, saying, the child is not awakened. Then when Elisha was come into the house, behold, the child was dead, and laid upon his bed, the bed that was for Elisha. And he went in, shut the door upon the two of them, and he prayed unto God, and he went up and lay upon the child, put his mouth upon the child's mouth, his eyes upon his eyes, his hands upon his hands, stretched him forth upon the child, and the flesh of the child became warm. Then he returned and walked in the house to and fro, and went up and did it himself again, and the child sneezed seven times and opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and he said, call the Shunammite. So he called her. And when she had come up to him, he said to her, take up your son, embrace him again. So she went in and fell at his feet and bowed himself to the ground and took up her son, and they went out. Beautiful story of mercy. A child receiving his life again. This child may be the minor prophet known as Habakkuk. That's the tradition. There's no proof, but that's the tradition. In Hebrew, the word embrace is habak. And to emphasize it twice, the B is doubled. Habakkuk, or the K is doubled. Habakkuk. So that he was embraced twice. Once, or the first time, when he was born. And the second time, when life was returned to him. If indeed it is Habakkuk, no wonder he authors the book of only three chapters by his name. Today we're going to look into this book. Last week, as I proceeded on the subject of the coming kingdom of God, this topic should be considered as somewhat motivational for us to be seeking the kingdom and making sure that we are close to our Creator. So the title is Habakkuk. And the purpose to speak about the subject, stay close to God. When we look at the book of Habakkuk, as I say, only three chapters in length, there in the Minor Prophets, I think one of the first things that strikes us, besides its shortness, is the fact that we say in verse 1, the burden which Habakkuk, the prophet, did see. So he is known as a prophet, one that's going to see into the future, or a seer, a propheter, and he's going to talk about things that are going to come to pass. And what is revealed in these words and this story, and if you read it in various translations. Some of you may have the New King James Version. Does anyone? You'll probably see a poetic perspective in the book. If you would turn back one book to Nahum, Nahum in all of his chapters is entirely poetic. This is an aside topic, but if one studies the poetic structure, looking at the literary style of the Old Testament and then of these two books for sure, you begin to have a sense of what is happening in the book of Psalms more completely. As I said, it's an aside, but it can be a very interesting look at what is revealed. So what does Habakkuk say when he sees what he sees in his vision? O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? Even cry out unto you of the violence, and you do not save. He says, how long am I going to see all of this confusion going on, and all of this discomfort, all of this pain, and you don't respond? This is a book called, or a commentary, in a series called the Socino series. It takes the book and gives a Hebraic commentary to the entire book, and it reads back to front as the Hebrew language is, and also contains the Hebrew language. And so one that is knowledgeable about Hebrew finds this an additional helpful book. And he says then in the commentary about the anomaly of a just God allowing guilt to go unchecked. And for looking around, you'll see that there is a lot of depravity in the world seemingly going unchecked. And so we find that there's this violence and nothing has changed. Verse 3, why do you show me iniquity and cause me to be holding and behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are none that raise up strife and contention. And they are those that raise up strife and contention. I'm sorry, I misread that. There's all these problems that we have in our society today. And when it comes down to it, the law is slacked. Judgment does never go forth. The wicked does compass about the righteous, and that finally produces wrong judgments. And that's what proceeds. If you look at the courts of the land today, and things that have been happening in our own state and how high profile some of the murder situations that have been happening in Orlando. And everybody has their opinion, but the whole matter of justice is sidelined. It's who you can buy as an attorney representing you that seems to be more important than justice. So we have then the answer beginning and response in verse 5 from the Creator. As Habakkuk looks around and sees all this vile disobedience, the Maker responds, behold you among the heathen. So you're there, there's sin all around you, and regard and think and realize that there are wonders that are going to happen marvelously. For I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told to you. I'm going to do something unbelievable. What I am going to provide for you will be stranger than fiction. Now, in looking at Habakkuk, the things that we're going to be coming about that are stranger than fiction were going to come about during the time when Israel, and then especially the house of Judah, is reformed, and Judah comes back out of captivity and reestablishes the temple. And this that happened in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. But as we go through this, I'm going to point out to you that there is a duality here, that what is talked of in Habakkuk and what was fulfilled has never been completely fulfilled, and will, though, be fulfilled when Christ returns. And knowing that, it should motivate us to be very clear in our relationship with God that it is strong, complete, and that we are meek and following the Maker. So he says in 6, I will raise up the Chaldeans. And the Chaldeans are the people of Chaldee or Babylonia. That bitter and hasty nation which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. Of course, the Assyrians came through and took the house of Israel under the under their strong government, and their capital was Nineveh. And now the Babylonians will come through, and their capital, Babylon. And it doesn't matter what you think of them, he says, they're going to raise the roof, and all of your places will be gone. And in that sense, that it is a dual prophecy, because of what is said here is going to happen to the lands and peoples of God, historically, the tribes of Israel. He says, they are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than the leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from afar. They shall fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. Now it says here of the leopard, and of course the leopard is a very strong beast. It takes his kills. It talks about other things, and it mentions even an eagle. And the word for eagle in Hebrew is nesher. Actually, it's not just an eagle. It's a strong bird, like a vulture. There's a beer in Israel, and it's called nesher. And it's got the picture of this bird on it. You know, you look at our beers today, you've got some real strong sayings, dog's breath and different types of beer that people put unusual titles to or name of their beer. Well, so it is in Israel. They've got their vulture beer, nesher. And he says that as they fly, that they're going to attack. And so we need to be aware of what is happening as we see so much vanity plaguing our legal system and the revolutions that are taking place around the earth. And as we all learn a little bit more day by day what this spring, this Arab spring is all about, and the contentions and the fights that they start in nations upon nations. And we need to be then clearly aware of what's wrong with the ways that are going on around us. As we see the disillusionment of people and the governments starting to disappear. In Ezra, just holding your finger there in Habakkuk if you wish, in Ezra chapter 9, I'm sorry, Ezekiel chapter 9, it says in verse 3, "And the glory of the God of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called to the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And the Lord said to him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem," and that's who Habakkuk is writing to, those of the house of Judah, "and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof." Judah is representative of the house of Judah, and it is remarkable then that it would be responsive to us as the people of God at this time. But God says there are some that can have a mark set upon them so that they are protected. "And to the others he said in my hearing, Go you after him through the city and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have you pity. Slay the old and the young, maids and little children and women. But come not near on any man of whom is the mark. Now begin at my sanctuary." The sanctuary of God is his church. "Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. And he said to them, Defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go forth, and they went forth, and they slew in the city." And so he goes on to say in 8, as the verse 8 says, "It came to pass, well, they were slain them, that I was left, and I fell upon my face, and I cried, said, Lord God, will you destroy all the rest of Israel? and the pouring out of your fury upon Jerusalem? And he said, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great, and the land is full of blood, the city full of perverseness, for they say the Lord has forsaken the earth, and he doesn't care. Now this word perverseness is in here. When things are perverted, when they're turned, and they're the change in the way people do what is natural is perverted, it strikes some very difficult thoughts in our minds. He says, my eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their head. And behold, the man which was clothed with linen, which had the inkhorn by his side, reported the man's matter, saying, I have done all that you have commanded me. This nation is going to be cleaned up by being cleared out. And we need to be sure that we are the ones that God has response to because we have His Spirit. That is the mark marking His people. That we have His Spirit and we're using His Spirit in a relationship with Him. And that we're solid in our relationship. That we have a certain spiritual clarity and spiritual judgment that we should be able to use. But it all starts with knowing about what is going on around you, that you sigh and you cry for the abominations. This is what it says in that verse 4. Consider then the great injustices that are going on, the legal injustice, the financial, the employment problems, the political problems. The fury from God is going to be poured out on all Jerusalem, all of Israel. These people that sighed and cried somehow found a place of safety from the great wars that are going to happen. They had the mark on them because they were sighing and crying. This must be very important to God for Him to record it in this, just this way. And so it is important for you and I to know what is in our heart and that God sees our heart. And the different scriptures in Revelation talk about how that there are the 144,000 and then the innumerable multitude that are going to be taken care of as God sees fit to protect His people. So when we go back to Habakkuk, we had been reading through verse 8. We see now in verse 9. Then shall come all the violence, their faces shall sup up the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. And they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing that his power is from his God. So these will then say, well, we're being blessed by our God and the wars that we entangle ourselves with, and we win, so our gods that we have made are great. Genesis 6:5 tells us that God looked down on the earth, and he said the imaginations of man's heart were wrong. We're familiar with Jeremiah 17:9, that the heart of man, the deceitful nature of man's heart, is so wrong. It is desperately wicked. Who can know it? The question being, do you know your heart? God knows your heart, and if you sigh and cry for what you see going on that is wrong in our nations today. It tells God many things when He sees that our heart and our character is such that we can make the spiritual comparison to what should be in the coming kingdom compared to what we see going on today on earth. God wants to see Himself in a relationship with those that are concerned, distressed, and repulsed by what they see occurring on this earth. And that's why He then sets them apart for deliverance. We're at a time when God does start His looking process of that, I'm sure. And so it reminds you of a scripture in Luke 21:19. Luke 21:19 says, in your patience possess your souls. Impatiently, as you walk through the courses that you have, are you possessing an understanding of your life and the life that is to come? And so when we see these things going on around us, it's important for us to then start to fabricate and ask ourselves, how do you react to what is happening in our nation today? How do you see the difficulties? How do you react to sex and violence when you see that on television and in the games and the movies that people play? How do you react to terrorism? What's your thought about terrorists? How do you react to drug misuse and oppression? How do you react to the court system? What do you think? How do you see God would have rather done things? He allows so much injustice to stand. Sometimes we can become numb and hardened at what we see going on around us, and we need to be sure that we don't become so calloused that we don't really understand or come to grips with what is going on. That we really do sigh and cry over the depths of this nation's depravity. So then in 12 he says, Habakkuk 1 verse 12, are you not God from everlasting to everlasting, O Lord my God? So now we're moving in a way that Habakkuk is now responding to this comment from God. O Lord my God, my Holy One, we shall not die, O Lord. You have ordained them for judgment, O Almighty God. You've established them for correction. You are of a purer eyes than to behold evil. You will not look on iniquity. Wherefore then do you look upon them that deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours the man that is more righteous than he? So he asked the question, if you aren't going to look at evil, then why do you permit evil that is so much more wrong than what is going on in your own lands and amongst your own peoples? Why do you have an eye that won't respond to the evils you see going on in other ungodly nations? These others make men as the fish of the sea and as the creeping things and have no ruler over them. They take up all of them with the angle or with the fish hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag or net. They rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice unto their net and they burn incense to their drag, because by them their portion is fat and their meat plenteous. So they just rape the sea. And not only the sea, but all mankind, the strengths of men. And people are still seemingly making tremendous amounts of money, while most of the world is suffering tremendously. The starvation that you see in Africa, a very difficult thing to watch. They empty their net, and they don't spare continually, and they discontinue to kill nations. And so he says, God, are you going to allow this to continue? Now in chapter 2 of Habakkuk, there are 5 woes mentioned. You might say 5 curses. 5 different ways in which he's going to bring judgment. And there's a transition at the end of the chapter in verse 20. That is very important to us. So let's look now at chapter 2. Waiting for an answer here. Haggai realizes he has to wait in faith. And he uses a comment in the end of verse 4 that is very familiar to you. So Habakkuk says, I will stand upon my watch. In other places, like Ezekiel 33:34, it talks about being a watchman. Are you on your watch? Now, it is the job of the church, of God's congregations, to be watchmen. But it also has its personal application. Are you watching your own spiritual foundation? I will sit upon my tower and will watch to see what he will say to me and what I should answer when I am reproved. So then there was the answer from God, and he says, write the vision, make it plain upon tables that you may run, that he may run that reads it. Make it so clear when a person reads it, they're going to say, oh, I'm off, I'm going, I'm away from here. You know, then what is it? 1 Corinthians 5 talks about fleeing fornication. You run away from it. You flee from away from sin. Talks in Matthew 24 about those are around Jerusalem at the time that it falls to flee, to run away. And it talks in Hebrews 12:1 about running a race with patience. There's a lot to say about running, and that's what he says here. And it's the running comes about because we are so clear of mind to see the difference between what is right and wrong. And that should define each one of you today. For the vision is not yet for an appointed time. So now we start to see a transition in this book. We've been talking about what is going to happen and did happen long ago to the house of Judah and Israel. But there's another application in this book for the end time. An appointed time, it says. But at the end it shall speak and not lie. And it's important that you see that this appointed time is at the end. Not halfway through. It's at the end of the reign of mankind. And nothing's going to stop it. You wait for it because it will surely come. It will not wait. Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him. And that's a reference just back across the page to the fact that they would set up their own gods and say, well, this is how we're having our success. But the just shall live by his faith. I was reading in this Socinian commentary, and this is a unique verse. The Talmud records a remark by one named R. Simlai, S-I-M-L-A-I, and this is a quote then, and this has somewhat to do with understanding how the canonization of the Bible came about and how it was written by different men and then reduced to the books that we have today, and God always brought it forward. It says, Moses gave Israel 613 commandments. Well, they aren't commandments as you and I would think of 10 commandments, but gave them 1,613 directives. If you go through Exodus and Deuteronomy, you'll find that there are instructions, 613 of them. Then David reduced them to 10. And if you go through David's codification and canonization and David's life, you'll see remarks about 10 commandments. Then Isaiah reduced them to 2, love of God and love of man. And so this author then says from the Talmud, but Habakkuk, he reduced it to 1, the righteous shall live by his faith. And that's a way to understand the 10 commandments and then how they're reduced to 2 understandings of love of God and love of man, just living by faith. Now this verse that you find here, verse 4, and the remark that the just shall live by faith, is used by Paul 3 times. And it is a little worthwhile noting that in Romans 1:17, Galatians 3:11, and Hebrews 10:38, I'll say them again, Romans 1:17, Galatians 3:11, and Hebrews 10:38, that Paul uses that same phrase 3 times. So what he learned from Habakkuk became important to his own writings, and we refer to them often. And so that is another point to take into your understanding of how well read Habakkuk was of the people that wrote us so many things in the New Testament. So now we come to verse 5. And in all of these, we're going to have an introduction, and finally in verse 6, we'll have the first woe mentioned. There's a woe in verse 6, the second in verse 9, the third in verse 12, the fourth in verse 15, and then the fifth is in verse 19. So back to verse 5. He also, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man, neither keeps at home, who enlarges his desire as hell, and is as death, and cannot be satisfied. But he gathers unto him all nations, and heaps up him all people. Shall not all these take up a parable against him, and a taunting proverb against him, saying, Woe to him that increases that which is not his! How long unto him that lades himself with thick clay? Eminent domain kind of a thought. I'm going to take what you got because I want it and I can have it. All I have to do is take it. What is just and what is right, that's by the boards. Eminent domain. And it says, how is he going to be able to do that? Well, just like going through a thick, soupy yard filled with clay after a big rainstorm and the mud's a foot deep. He says, and you start going through that, it sticks to your shoes. And so he says that this is the way that they do things. They just, how long are they going to do it? Just while, like him that lays himself with thick clay. It's just going to be something that holds you back, but they're going to proceed. Shall they not rise up suddenly? They shall bite you. And awake, that they shall vex you, and you shall be for booties to them. Because you have spoiled many nations, all the remnant of your people shall spoil you. Because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land of the city, and of all that dwell therein. So the spilling of blood. And so you see, this first woe has to do with pride and the consumption that we find in our Western lifestyle. And we consume them by theft and fraud. All of us know that we have too many outlets for media in our homes. And now our phones have become media outlets. And they can do all kinds of things. We can communicate. I guess the newest droid is a remarkable opportunity. It'll communicate with your home computer. So you can carry your computer around and attach whatever you need to your home CPU and work on a much larger and grander scale. Is that how the guy did it? The guy at UBS that 2 days ago found that the bank was $2 billion short? How did he do it? Simply with a phone? I don't know. It just makes you see that people, if they want something, they can take it. Something that is secure and has gone through as much transition as a bank, now they're taking it. What about verse 9 now? Woe to him that covers an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nation on high, that he may be delivered from that power of evil. Gaddafi thought he was impregnable. Still is, for some reason. We haven't got him yet. Nobody's got him. You have committed shame to your house by cutting off many people and have sinned against your life. How many people have died in the Middle East, Northern Africa, and the starvation in the Sudan area? How many people have died because people want to have? How much food has been shipped there and just spoiled, not found its source? How much of it has gone onto the black market? For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer it. So they don't have honor and glory. You have some real difficult things that we go through. Right now, our nation is wondering what in the world we're going to be doing. How alone will we stand next week? and the United Nations as people try to establish or disestablish Israel. And they've been our strong partner, and we've supported them. How long will that continue? Because people want. They want everything. The third woe has to do with theft in verse 12. Woe to him that builds a town with blood and establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, it is not of the Lord of hosts that the people shall labor in their very fire, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as waters cover the sea. So in the midst of this woe, verse 14 stands out as showing us that the solution to these curses is the coming kingdom of God. And you start looking around at all the theft that is going on. And going on to verse 15. Woe to him, the fourth one. Woe to him that gives his neighbor drink, that puts the bottle to him, and makes him drunken, also that may look on their nakedness. You are filled with shame for glory. Drink you also, and let the foreskin be uncovered. The cup of the Lord's right hand shall be turned unto you, and the shameful spewing shall be of your glory, or on your glory. A couple of things that maybe don't pop out immediately, but if you see in verse 15, it talks about bottle. Verse 16, it talks about cup. Some people drink it by the bottle. Some people drink it by the cup. He's saying moderation is much more important. If you aren't moderate in your intake of things, and not just alcohol, but life itself, you'll become drunken. You stumble then. It becomes the god. And when people get so drunk, that says they'll even walk around without clothes on. I remember one of these trips I was making when all these difficult things were happening at the New Year's time. I went to New Orleans, and my hosts were showing me New Orleans. And there wasn't much going on. It was raining. But we're going back home, and here on the porch was a person, a rather grand person, totally undressed, drinking. I says, "Look at that. I had never seen anything like that." And he said, "Yeah, I saw it." He says, "That was a woman." He says, "No, that was a man." I says, "Well, either it's a very fat woman or a very fat man." "Yeah, we just kept driving." But that's where people end up after they imbibe just way too much. And talks in Revelation 14 and 17 about the wine of their fornication. And so when all that happens, it'll be the certain spewing shall be on your glory. That's vomit, because they are totally unable to keep their stomach. And so these are very gluttonous, insatiable appetites, drunken orgies, people wanting what they want. And so you come up with congressmen with last names like Wiener. And what our nation's been through with that. The embarrassment that these things can be shoveled around the internet. What a waste of time. We come to the fifth woe. Starting in 18, what profits the graven image and the maker thereof, that have graven it, the molten image and the teacher of lies, the maker of his work, trust therein, to make dumb idols? Woe to him that says to the wood, "Awake!" To the dumb stone, "Arise, and it shall teach you." It's laid over with gold and silver. There is no breath at all in the midst of it. And so he says that there's this idolatry that goes on too. I still sit and wonder why was no prayer to be uttered at the 9/11 memorial this last weekend? Was it no God? No religion? Was that the statement? Or was the statement that government is the religion? There's different ways to look at that scenario. And you see people saying how great they are today. We've had the debates going on TV. Everybody's trying to put down the next guy. So we now come to verse 20. But the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. Now this is an important transitional verse. When in the past has the Lord been in His temple and there's been silence? There has not been a time. The time when the Lord is in His temple and there is silence is at the waiting of the return of Christ. So the Lord's place in His temple in the Holy of Holies, this illustrates the prophecy of a heavenly Jerusalem being prepared to come to this earth. It doesn't happen at the fore part of the millennium, it happens after that. But Habakkuk, being dual in nature, has been telling us what is going to be the cause of our national calamities and how it will be overrun by the peoples of Babylon. It applies to the rebuilding of Jerusalem after the captivity and the returning king, bringing then the heavenly Jerusalem. The heavenly Jerusalem will come, and at that time there is silence in heaven. So then we come to chapter 3 about Christ's return and the difficulties that the societies are going to go through when Christ returns and establishes His throne. So chapter 3 is not a pretty picture because He is coming to clean up what is wrong with our world, with the societies of man. So He says, a prayer of Habakkuk upon the prophet upon Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard Your speech and was afraid. O Lord, I revive Your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known in wrath, remember mercy. So when You come and it's a wrathful time and there's pain to be had, please have mercy on us. Now this particular book I'm turning to here is a Moffat translation. And I want to read this chapter 3 from the Moffat. You might remember your high school days and you had to read a little poetry and you tried to forget it. You might have had to read Homer's Odyssey, or maybe you learned about it, these epic poems that don't have the kind of rhyme like Mother Goose rhymes go. The epic poems tell more of a story. That's how this chapter 3 is written. Moffat went to a lot of trouble to try to equate the words to society about 100 years ago. It is still fairly readable. And I want you to just, if you have your King James, or if you have a new King James in that poetic style, just listen to it as I read through Habakkuk 3. Now it's going to tell us, and I'm not going to have to make much comment because it comments well enough on itself, about the destruction that's going to come because this world is sinful. And so starting in 3:1, a prayer of the prophet Habakkuk in diarrhythmic measure. We have heard You, O Eternal. We have seen You in action. Strike now, for the years are passing. Reveal Yourself now as the years go by. And amid the wrath, remember to be merciful. 3. God comes from Teman, the majestic one from the Paran hills. His splendor over the sky, His glory filling all the earth. His radiance is a lightning blaze on either side, flashing rays. And there He veils His might. Before him, pestilence strides. Behind him, the burning plague. Verse 6. At his step, the earth is shaken. At his look, nations are scattered. The ancient hills are scattered. Mountains of old sink low where he marched long ago. Scaring the tents of Cushan, shaking the curtain tents of Midian. Over the sea he strides with you, stride with your steeds. Your mighty waters surge. Art angry with the hills, O Eternal? Are you wrathful at the sea? You are storming on your steeds, upon your chariots in triumph. Your bow, the clans bound by an oath, you bear, and the land is torn with streams. The hills wreathe at your sight. Floods pour down from the skies. The torrents roar. The sun forgets to rise, the moon to move. Before the flashes of your darting arrows, before the sheen of the lightnings, your lance, you trample the earth in fury, threshing the peoples in your anger. You are abroad to rescue your own nation, to choose and to save the chosen. You have unroofed the enemy's house. You've laid it bare to the foundations. Your spears have pierced the warrior chiefs who stormed out to scatter us. Their joy was to mortar us, the poor folk in hiding. The sound of this sets our hearts a-shaking. We listen with lips a-quiver. Our very bones are breaking, and we stand, we shiver. Yet calmly we await the day of doom that dawns upon the folk who would assail us. 17. Though the fig tree may not blossom, though no fruit is on the vine, though the olive crop has failed, though the fields give us no food, though the folds have lost their flocks, and in the stalls no cattle lie, yet in the eternal will we find our joy. We will rejoice in the God who saves us. The Lord, the Eternal, is our strength. He makes our feet sure as the feet of deer, helping us to keep our footing on heights. From the Choir Master's Collection to a Stringed Accompaniment. This man, Habakkuk, if indeed he is the one that was embraced by his mother when he came to her in life, when her time was past, and she suddenly found herself with a son, who 5 or 6 years later fell and became ill and quickly died, perhaps of something like a sunstroke. And she was put him upon the bed of Elisha. And finally life returns to him again, and then he is embraced again by this woman. How deeply do we embrace the ways of God? And do we sigh and cry for the troubles that are in our nation? Make sure you are separate from these sinful ways. We live among them, but we are not of them.